Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
I think they assume that there's like anonymity with it, even though their name is attached to the account, because like I like making content and, you know, broadcasting. I particularly like radio because it's kind of passive, you know, people just sit and listen. They can't necessarily engage unless they're really, really bothered. Most people aren't going to, you know, go to the effort of making a formal complaint to a radio station. Whereas social media, they have that option. Just they tap their phone screen a few times and they can give their opinion.
Have you ever reported anyone?
Not really, because I just feel like that would be an endless battle. Like, for me, I either block them on Twitter, I ban them from my Facebook page. I don't know what the long-term solution is. The short-term, like I said, is just to ignore them, but there's just no point in trying to reach them.
That was Joy 94.9's Mitchell Coombs, host of Not My Cup of Tea, talking about his experience with online bullying. It's Wednesday the 13th of December. I'm Daniel Roberts, your host on tonight's Informer. Tonight, we're bringing you a jam-packed show. We'll be talking to artist Harry Clayton Wright about what could be seen as a rare thing in our community and the community of artists, sobriety.
And I'm Darcy Meehan. We're also talking about a very recent social media smear post against one of our own here at Joy. Delcy from Unicorn Youth was today the victim of a smear campaign by popular online blogger Political Posting Mama.
We'll also talk to Harry McAnulty from the Victorian AIDS Council about the Australian government's recent announcement to donate a further $20,000 to support regional Victoria's LGBTIQ local drug action teams. The LDAC are a massive source of support for members of our community who struggle with alcohol and drug addiction.
But first, we touch base with Joy's very own Delcy from Unicorn Youth, who was recently featured in a post by Political Posting Mama, a Facebook blogger who's taken some photos from her page and removed all context to make her over 18 events look like they were for under 18s.
Delcy from Unicorn Youth, it's a pleasure having you on The Informer.
Thanks for having me.
Delcy, something's happened today, and it so happens that a lot of our episode was based around how people are perceived on social media. This has just come to our attention in the last few hours, or in the last hour, actually. Would you like to talk us through what's happened?
Well, it was about half an hour ago, I just sent a message saying that a Facebook group for mums had posted some pictures of me because I am one of, well, I am the event manager for Minus 18, and they then said that it wasn't suitable that I was running parties for young people and just started to, I suppose, defame me online and post pictures of me without my consent. And I also run parties for over 18-year-olds in the queer community, and they used the posters, pictures from those parties, but said they were for the underage parties, which is not correct.
So basically what's happened, this online presence, we'll call her, political posting mama or politically posting mama, I don't even want to get her name right so that no one goes to see her page. She has taken some photos from your personal page and said that this is what goes down at Minus 18 parties. So let's talk about the great work that Minus 18 do and why this person might want to bring down Minus 18.
So Minus 18 is a youth-led organisation which aims to support queer young people through workshops, social events and dance parties and the Queer Formal, which you've probably heard of, that happens in Melbourne and Adelaide and hopefully Sydney. So we are a not-for-profit charity and my role there is to organise the parties. But, yeah, they've been running for 18 years now and been doing great work to support young people. It's one of the only queer youth orgs which aims to foster inclusion through parties and dance parties outside of just workshops and, like, discussion groups.
So this is, like we said, it's kind of fresh news. How are you feeling? What's it like to see someone posting sort of flat-out lies made about you and then with supported photos and basically directing their audience to your page? How are you feeling right now?
I feel really weird. I feel concerned about obviously what people are saying, and I read the comments, which wasn't a good idea, and a lot of them are just personal attacks at me. There's some transphobic comments on there. I'm not actually a trans-identifying person, but I know if I was trans and reading those comments, that they'd be pretty hurtful. There's a lot of connections being made to safe schools, which has nothing to do with anything that I do, but it's obviously really hard to see them defaming safe schools as well. But yeah, I don't know. It's really upsetting because it's hard to control, and I don't know whether to like talk to them about it and talk to them about the work I do with young people, or if it's better to just leave it. Feels like high school bullying, really.
Well, it really does, and it's almost exactly going against what safe schools is all about, creating a nurturing safe environment for students. Instead, it's sort of perpetuating hate. Safe schools has become a target for people that are fearful of, I don't know, new government, new ideas. Do you think that's why they've linked safe schools in with your posts?
I think that people like this take any opportunity to draw tangents. So they, just like when we were talking about marriage equality, they start to link it to sex education schools and stuff that is not actually connected to whether marriage equality goes through and is passed. So I think they kind of, yeah, they make all these tangents that might not actually be relevant. And if they did their research, they'd actually know what a minus 18 party looks like, and it's so safe and inclusive, and I put so much hard work into making this space really wonderful for young people, and there's so many cute activities and things that are fostering great friendships and support for these people, but they're choosing to not look into the facts, or they do know the facts and they're just misconstruing the truth to try and paint a negative picture of people like me who work really hard to support queer youth.
It must be disappointing, particularly when every day your job is to make sure that queer youth are okay, and then you see this kind of backlash sort of try to, like you said, defame or take everything down that you've been working towards.
Yeah, like my whole life is dedicated to supporting queer young people, whether that's through like the radio show Unicorn Youth, or my role as a high school teacher, or creating these safe spaces for queer young people through Minus 18. So it's pretty heartbreaking actually that I spend nearly my whole life working on supporting the queer community. I work like 7 days a week, but I suppose you can't control how other people feel about you and the work you do, and people are going to be anti-queer and they're going to look for reasons to attack you, and a picture of me in a mesh top was their reason.
As someone who does have some sort of a public profile to do with LGBT youth, I know it's only just happened, but what do you do now?
It's a hard one. I spoke to people at Minus 18 about what they thought the correct strategy was, because my initial reaction was I wanted to educate these people. I wanted to write in the comments or send a personal message to this political mama and explain to them the work that I actually do, and maybe they could look into some actual photos of kids at Minus 18 and see what a great vibe it has. But I'm told it's just going to add fuel to the fire, so just to leave it. I've also been told a cool strategy is, and I actually found this out from people at Project Rocket who work hard to combat online bullying in schools, but I think the strategies can still apply to adults for sure. But they said to get as many friends as you can who want to support you, just to say something nice about you in the comments, so you're not fueling the fire with anger and hate, but you're just trying to say, you know, this is the good work that this person has done. And we're not going to change their minds, but it might be a way to kind of diffuse the situation if they knew that not everyone was on board with their opinion.
Well, sorry we've had to go through it today. And Delcy, thanks for coming on The Informer to talk to us about it.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks for chatting.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
That was Delcy from Joy's Unicorn Youth. While social media isn't always the friendliest environment, it can be a great place to connect with people and find support. Harry Clayton Wright is a world-renowned artist currently performing with Australian boylesque group Briefs. This year, Harry announced on social media that he is 2 years sober. We chatted to him about what it's like balancing the life of an artist, gay man, and sobriety, and what his message has meant for others.
I started in London on a sort of club circuit and was very much, I would say, a party boy. as a fair assessment of who I was a few years ago. And making work for a club environment and also kind of riders and drinks and partying, like, became part of the lifestyle of work for me. Like, I would know that I would do a show and then, like, get really messed up afterwards. And then it reached a point, like, I actually went to Glastonbury and did a performance that lasted for 107 hours, just as a teenage girl who wouldn't leave her bedroom. And during that performance, I would get, like, blackout drunk and other substances, like, you know, just... And we filmed the piece. So when I reviewed the footage of who I was, not many people get to see themselves, like, actually that messed up. And not only that, dressed as a teenage girl, that messed up either.
Mm, confronting.
Yeah, it was very confronting. And I knew that I was very unhappy. I also did the Edinburgh Fringe that year in 2015 and was just feeling really rotten all the time and drinking before shows, drinking during shows, after shows, like, so many nights a week. And I just realized that there were, you know, so many weeks and months that I just were all sort of blurring into one sort of painful hangover. And there would be times where I would go out on a Tuesday just for one drink and come home on a Thursday and be like, what? How did that happen? I have no idea. And I've definitely felt like I'd lost control. And then later on that year, I just went out for one and it became really bad. And the next day I was meant to be doing a project with a friend, and I sort of turned up at their house and just couldn't function that day. And I was like, this is really embarrassing now that I am, like, unable to be a human in the world because I went for, like, one drink last night and now I'm a mess. And this has happened too many times and I really need to take a long, hard look at my life, which I did. I moved to Brighton and I sort of decided to become sober. And ever since that, life has changed for the better.
So since that realization, how hard has it been to let go of that lifestyle? Because, you know, you do spend your life, well, a lot of your life now, performing in festival tents and you know, in going to artist bars after shows. So has that been something that's been hard to let go of?
It's been a recalibration because, you know, those creative environments are still nourishing for me, but, like, I don't need to stick around and be the last one there. I don't need to, like, have the drinks before the show or after the show. I actually was like, I'm here for the work. I'm here to perform. I'm here to do my job. And I love what I do so much and get a lot out of entertaining people and making people laugh and making people feel something. And that's my job. And I don't need to accept the lifestyle as, like, uniform for the way I behave. Because it isn't, and not everybody is like that either. Like, there are so many people that respect the choice or actually are like that too. And there's, like, a little sober community of performers and people, and we kind of connect or help each other or are able to be sounding boards if we're having difficulty. And I work with a company who are really respectful of my choices and who I am. And there's no pressure or, like, feeling that I'm not part of a company or a team by not engaging in that, because actually we're all there for the work. And it's really nice that that's the case, because, you know, if I, you know, working in club environments, which I don't really do anymore, would probably be more of a challenge. I'm still learning a lot about it. But I am around bars and, like, drink and that all the time. But, yeah, as I say, I can just go home and go to sleep and wake up really fresh and then go to work the next day and do my job. And, just because I'm there doesn't mean I need to do it. But for a while, I did feel not, like, fun anymore, because I was like, oh, I used to remember when, like, with this performance energy, I'd have drinks after the show and ride that and we'd go out and we'd do all of these things, and now I'm just tired and now I can't wait to go to bed. And, like sleep, and it has changed me, but I'm now more excited and more work focused.
In terms of performance, have you found that the performance you get, a high from performance, has been more valuable than what you were maybe looking for outside of that?
I think I've accessed a different place in terms of performance, energy and ability, because now there is more focus on what that is. And I'd say before, there was definitely a point where I was maybe not necessarily as present, like in terms of my performances, like maybe more towards the club days and just like was involved in that party atmosphere. And now, I feel like there's probably like you're getting better. Like, well, I'd say definitely you're getting better performances out of me because I'm way more like grounded in what I'm doing. And I'm also looking after myself a lot better. While it was like fun to just be like, hey, I'm really drunk, I'm going to jump off the stage into a split. Like, that's not great for my longevity of my body. Like, and I, like, without warming up either. Like, I used to do that quite regularly.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah. And I would be like, I'd find it really funny in the moment. And then the next day I'd be like, you're an idiot. You didn't warm up. You didn't warm up. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned on Twitter and Instagram on your 2-year anniversary of going sober that you were unable to cope with trauma and that drink and drugs had become a coping mechanism and a temporary escape from sadness. How do you come to realize that, and how do you deal with sadness now?
I definitely had to, when I moved to Brighton, kind of take a long, hard look as to why the decision of regularly wanting to escape, where that came from. And that had come from a place of an unfortunate incident that is still something that I'm like working out how I talk about publicly, as opposed to like, you know, because it wasn't all just like the drink and drug lifestyle that had taken me there were like things that had happened that weren't great. And I think when you are able to like really reflect on those incidents and like take the time, which I hadn't done up until that point because I'd been working and touring and it'd been amazing, but also, yeah, just working through that and then kind of feeling like, oh, okay, I can deal with this and I can look at myself in the mirror and like myself again. It's a really difficult thing to kind of talk about, and it's still like, you know, how much of, because it does find its way into my work now, like, and I'm able to kind of access those places and allow myself in ways that I find comfortable presenting artistically, but like it's still within conversation very much like, oh, okay, like hey, like but who isn't a bit broken? Or, and I think we all have that, it's just we don't always know because these things aren't surface.
Is that something that you think, so from your experience of going sober, for
yeah.
example, I that sounds weird to say going sober, but I'm going with it. Is it the right thing to say? I don't know. So being sober, choosing to be sober.
Yeah. Or like sobriety.
Sobriety. Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned that there are a group of artists that you all support each other.
Mm.
What are some of the things that you think could help those that are struggling with this to sort of...
No, it's like, everybody has their own journey.
Yeah, and their own experience.
And like the J word is such a cliched word, but yeah. It's so true. Mm. And that's why I try and talk about it regularly online and often offer like an open DM, like for anyone wanting to talk about it. And I try my very best like to get back to everybody or like, you know, really help where I possibly can. But I think definitely being more honest about that struggle online has been something that I found has just benefited me in people getting a heads up. Like, so now people are not going to be that person that's like, was formerly a crazy party boy. And that is really great because it just kind of gets that out the way. But it also opens up that dialogue for other people. And I found that I've had great interactions from people just being like, hey, I'm just checking myself at the moment because I, you know, maybe I'm getting a bit too much. And, you know, some people don't need to give up entirely. Like, some people just need to, like, maybe watch it. And some other people probably, like, will, like, find that they might need to. And that, like, it's just working out what that personal experience is. But I think being more open and honest about it is definitely something that I've found has benefited my interactions with people.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
That was Harry Clayton Wright talking to myself and Darcy earlier today.
While substance abuse is something anyone can struggle with, members of the LGBTQI community are often part of this struggle, particularly in regional areas where the support isn't as readily available. Thankfully, the government recently announced more funding for the local drug action teams in regional Victoria.
Harry McAnulty is the Victorian AIDS Council Country Program Coordinator. He joined us earlier to talk about this funding, to talk about what this funding means and what the next step is for regional drug and alcohol care for the LGBT community.
So we're going to be doing a range of activities, Dan. Most of all, the whole program's aim really is to reduce the harms associated with around alcohol and drugs within the LGBTI community. So there will be a really amazing focus on partnerships. So we will be partnering with LGBTI community members. We'll be partnering with local organisations to really design campaigns and resources and information that really reduce the harm associated with alcohol and other drug use.
Right, and with the local drug action teams, I guess specifically with regional communities, what kind of work do they do?
Well, look, we have just recently developed the action team, and it's made up of Backcountry, which is a program of the Victorian AIDS Council. It's made up of Bendigo Community Health Services, YFAS, and Headspace Bendigo. So really what we're coming together is to utilise all of our skills and knowledge around LGBTI issues, around alcohol and other drug issues, and develop in partnership with the community campaigns and resources. A big part of this work will look at capacity building and community leadership, because we really want to build up community leaders from the LGBTI community that can really advocate around alcohol and drugs, around other well-being issues as well. So it's really about increasing that connectedness between organisations and the community, and really letting the community know as well that there are services that support them and there are services that are doing this specific work for them as well.
Harry, you're based in Bendigo in Victoria. What are some of the... What are the recent studies showing about drug use in regional Victoria, and what's your experience been with it? What's being used more than others?
Look, I feel that a lot of the times, sometimes drug use can be, you know, a lot of the drug use that happens in regional communities can be exaggerated by the media. Do see issues with people who use alcohol and other drugs as coping mechanisms. You know, that could be because they've faced homophobia, transphobia, biphobia, any of these issues. And people generally, you know, they use alcohol and other drugs to, you know, get through those difficult issues.
Is isolation, does that play a part as well?
Look, definitely. I think the LGBTI community and regional communities definitely isn't as maybe connected, and there's maybe not as many social spaces or other places where people can feel connected to community and feel connected to queer culture as a whole. We're very lucky in Bendigo. We have, you know, a monthly gay night that happens here, and there's a range of other peer and social support groups, some of which Victorian AIDS Council run, some of which Headspace Bendigo run. There's a uni group. There's lots of different groups, but as you sort of, you know, go further out into the smaller regional towns, there's obviously a lot less support. So I feel in Bendigo there is quite a lot of different activities and projects that people can get involved in. But as you say, isolation as you go further out into regional areas is definitely a problem.
Right, and with this additional funding, I mean, how big of a difference is $20,000 going to make?
Oh, look, it's going to make an absolutely massive difference. Being able to have the funds to actually co-design resources, you know, that are led by the community, that are going to actually really have an impact on reducing the harms and reducing, you know, problematic use around drugs. So I think, you know, having access to that money and being able to use that money with the community and the design resources is going to make a you know, tremendous amount of difference.
Harry, in terms of the local drug action teams, at the moment there's 80 teams nationwide. With additional funding, what's the next step?
Oh, look, I think the next step will be listening to the community through this process. There's a lot of active community engagement. And we really hope that from this project over the next 12 months that we really activate community leaders and really, you know, have people in our communities that actually can talk to the policymakers, who can talk to our community organizations and actually tell them what the issues are as they emerge in the community. So I think this grant is just sort of the starting point. And as we continue on with the project and we have the community leaders and we have resources and we have things that are happening by the community, for the community, I think, you know, the only way is up, really.
That was Harry McInulty from the Victoria AIDS Council earlier today.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer. We'd like to thank all of tonight's guests for taking part in tonight's episode. A podcast of tonight's episode will be available shortly at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. I'm Daniel Roberts.
I'm Darcy Meehan.
Coming up next on Joy is the news headlines, followed by Not My Cup of Tea.